This evening, we have a very special treat for you. Mr. David Ausman is here with us to talk about his new literary projects, including a just-released collection called Marshmallows and Despair. To introduce him, let me read you just the first paragraph of Mr. Ausman's bio page at the Firesign Theater site. Poet, comedian, voice artist, producer, anthologist, teacher, David Ausman has worn a dizzying number of hats in his nearly 40 years of work in the audio medium. He has produced major series and programs for National Public Radio, American Public Media, WETA in D.C., WGBH in Boston, and Pacifica. On top of this impressive list of credentials, he has produced, directed, and voiced innumerable programs, advertisements, and other audio ephemera for various commercial and non-commercial radio outlets all over the globe. Okay, well, let's get Mr. Ausman into our little Skype chat here. Good evening, David.
Good evening, Leif the Lucky. I'm facing your picture here, and I love that title, Leif the Lucky. You should be.
Oh, I try to be. How are you, sir?
Good. I'm very well. I am actually very well. I'm going to cardio rehab 3 days a week, if possible, and, walking a couple of miles, more or less, uphill on the treadmill, and everybody says I look great. I feel fine.
Well, great that you've recovered so well. Just marvelous. And you want to talk about your new book, Marshmallows and Despair.
Well, Marshmallows and Despair. Yeah, it's out. These things take a long time, you know. Books seem to take a long time. I remember back in the Firesign days when we would wait 6 months for an album to come out. And we'd say, oh, my God, it'll all be dead, you know. But we were writing The Giant Rat of Sumatra, and like a story in Playboy magazine came out, which was a Sherlock Holmes satire called The Giant Rat of Sumatra. Oh, God.
Really?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that.
Actually, it did. But Marshmallows in Despair, which is a collection of basically of poems more or less political, not entirely, between the year 2000 and the year 2014. And fans, listeners, and yourself will know that during that time I did a lot of radio, both with Firesign on the Fools in Space show and with Peter ultimately on the Radio Free Oz, the last Radio Free Oz show. So many of these poems first were read on the radio. There are some that aren't, and then there's like 40 poems in this book, something like that. And it's the first collection of work in 6 or 7 years, I think, since the last book of poetry came out. And I'm really fond of the collection. I like it. And it's in a limited edition of 100 copies signed and numbered. I suppose if we go overboard and sell 1,000, why, they'll just have to do some reprinting. But basically, I've signed and numbered 100 copies in this first edition, and they're half gone already, at least half gone. I haven't seen the new figures. So I direct all of you out there toward this. It really is Firesign connected material as it could be, since it was read on the radio with the boys, you know. There's a little bit of Beat Street Jack. There are poems about politics. There are poems about being on the road. It's a good book. I like it, and you can find it at my website, David Ausman, www.davidausman.com, which my publisher has put in place for me. And so that's a big plug in. Let me pull out the plug a little bit by saying that website is going to be a lot of fun because I'd like to do a blog in it.
Ah, cool.
And I'm looking for a meeting with my editor, a guy named, we call him Rocks. And he'll be down and down here from Anacortes, which is up the coast a bit from Whidbey Island. And I'll be talking to him about putting new things on the website, maybe gathering some of the YouTube pieces that appear now and then. I'm always surprised when I find an old movie that I've narrated back in the 60s. It suddenly pops up on YouTube. But I'm going to see if we can't gather a bunch of those things on that website and also have a regular blog and a regular interaction. I feel like with Facebook, it's, you know, you get, what, 50 words is continued on the next page, you know? I mean, you can't really correspond with or really talk to people very much. So I'm trying to think about how to do that best.
Do you mind if I read the blurb that's on the website?
You go right ahead.
It says, limited, autographed, numbered edition. David Ossman's shocking, awesome, poetic coverage of 21st century war and politics. Tales of neo-noir nights in strange places. Poems of aging, dying, and seeking refuge. This definitive collection celebrates Ossman's 79th birthday and features a captivating cast that includes Beat Street Jack, Banana Clip Republicans, Funny Skydivers, as well as an elegy to Rocksnot. You'll be sold on the presidential butts in butter exposed to Heisenberg at Holmes Harbor. Visit the House of Garden Gnomes and celebrate Tulku's birthday. Enjoy a healthy dose of Ossman's fireside humor matched with his own outrage, anguish, and hope. That's well written.
Oh, boy, that is well written. That is well written. Thank you. I think I wrote that. They ask me for blurbs all of the time. And, you know, it would be great to have reviews back from the people who've already gotten the book. If you like it, if you don't, whatever. It would be great to have some blurbs back. They're beginning to come in from local people that have the book here on Whidbey Island. But from the rest of the great country out there, we have correspondence everywhere. The other thing I'm excited about, let's see, there's a bunch of things, but really I just finished a stage adaptation and my own translation of Jean Cocteau's Orpheus, which he wrote in 1926, and which I wrote Cocteau back when I was just, I think I was a senior in college. I wrote him and said, can I translate this play? Of course, I said it in French. Wasn't that clever of me? And he wrote me back, believe it or not, also in French, and said that a translation is an act of love, and he'd be proud if I did that. And that was way back in 1958. So over the years, I've done various versions of this script. I did a radio adaptation, never been produced, never even been done live, but I've been promised by my friends here on Whidbey Island that we're going to get a production of it, probably not this year, probably next, but it's a big, major play. And it's like so many other things in my life, you know, man, that I'm trying to wrap up. This has been, that work has been hanging on since, you know, 60 years. So finally, maybe we'll get a production of it. At least there's a translation of it. So that was exciting. It's finishing things up. You know, there are a lot of things that suddenly are cropping up out of nowhere from my past. I know we've mentioned The Sullen Art before. That's going to be out in April, I think. And this is going to be a very interesting read. I know that it's, it's not general literature. It's not a novel. It's not poetry. It is a series of interviews done a long time ago. But they add up to something quite interesting, I think. And the major Allen Ginsberg interview is really one of the first published on the radio in this case, interviews with Ginsberg. He had written Howl a few years before, but Kaddish hadn't come out yet. So it's very much in the midst of this creative period in his life. And it's the kind of the centerpiece of the Selenar. That's coming from an academic press, the University of Toledo, Ohio, in April. So that's another wrap-up. This is a great archive, 50 hours of interviews and poetry readings. And I'm hoping that we'll take some of the poetry readings and get them out there, because they haven't been heard for 50 years. So wow. They're on the rare side.
Well, you grew up in the Beat Generation, really, didn't you? And then kind of got into the psychedelic movement.
Yeah, I was young for Beat and old for psychedelic. I dropped kind of in between the two. Mm-hmm. The Beats, they were born in the late 20s. I was born in the mid, 1936, which made me a little old. By 1966, I was one of those people you couldn't trust because I was over
30. Right, I remember that.
But as I've found that very first event of being amongst the Beat writers and the other new American poets at that particular moment is, in fact, a unique moment. And that's what makes the book one of a kind. Since doing that, I have also been asked to write a piece about the Renaissance Pleasure Fair, because I was at the very first Renaissance Fair and also recorded, narrated, produced a documentary, sound, collage documentary, at the very first Renaissance Fair. So I was there at the beginning of that, and the people who hold the archive of the fair, the son of the Pattersons, Kevin Patterson, the son of Ron and Phyllis Patterson, who developed the fair originally, has put me on to write a piece, a memoir of those, let's say, the first 5 years. Let's say 63, which was the first Renaissance Fair, through to 68, where the Firesign Theater appeared for the first time at the fair. So many things were born at the Renaissance Fair. And I've already contributed to a book on the subject. So this is like going to be a piece that really comes from my own, as well as I can construct my memory of that. I don't know where that'll appear. Probably in a book that Kevin is thinking of putting together, a big history of the Renaissance Fair. Because he and my son Devin were about the same age. Devin, Allison, and Kevin all went to Wonderland Avenue School together. In Laurel Canyon. And so he was, of course, too young to remember those early fairs. And there aren't many of us around who still do.
That's really something that all that has come out of the Renaissance fairs. Much like the Mark Time Award thing, it expanded into other things.
Yes, we've taken the Mark Time Awards, and there'll be more on Mark Time very soon. We're going to open the Mark Time Awards for, and that would also have to do with all of the other categories. One has to go to the Mark Time website. I think it's marktimeawards.com.
I can look that up for you.
Yeah, and take a look at. It really celebrates all of the Firesign Theater. I know that my Mark Time image. Was kind of co-opted at the beginning for it, but now we have awards honoring Bergman and Proctor and Austin, so everybody is a part of Mark Time.
Yeah, it's marktimeawards.org. I'll post a link.
.org. Thank you very much. That's where that is, and there'll be more information there. It's hard to keep all of these websites going and up to date. It really is. The other thing that I can say, which just came, once again, talk about being in the right place at the right time. An anthropologist, an anthropologist from one of the State University of New York, SUNY Oneonta, has been in touch with me about what he calls the Neo-Hopi movement.
Really? Hadn't heard of that.
Well, you know, I hadn't heard it either, but it appears that all of our contacts in 1966 and 1967 with the Hopis, Peter and me and Radio Free Oz, all of that was a part of a much larger movement called the Neo-Hopi movement. And our contacts, Craig Carpenter and the Hopis, David Nonongye and the other Hopi people, we went out there for the winter solstice celebration in 1966. That was one of the earliest things Fireside ever did. And of course, it permeated our work for the first few years. Obviously, the first got temporarily Humboldt County is very much based on that material. And as a matter of fact, the title, Temporarily Humboldt County, was something that our faithful Indian compendium, Craig, said, well, yeah, he said it's temporarily.
I like it.
So I've discovered a bunch of material, photographs and a script for the 1966 documentary that Peter and I did. All this stuff just suddenly spilling out of the archive, and it's important because it otherwise doesn't exist. So, right time, right place. Right time, right place. The beats, of course, the love-in. You know, haven't written about that yet. Did write a long piece about Norman Corwin, which will be published in a book from the University of California Press, again, a memoir about our doing We Hold These Truths, which was this huge original documentary drama by Corwin celebrating the 150th anniversary of the Bill of Rights and our incredible fight with the government to get money or to even recognize the fact that we were celebrating the First Amendment. The First Amendment is not the one you want to celebrate first, and that was true back in 1992. So that's a very interesting saga of how we raised the money, how we did the program, how Norman wrote it, and it will be a part of a book. The rest of the pieces are all by academics. So I find myself as a fellow traveler in the academic community right now, which is a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it.
So that's the Anatomy of Sound you're talking about that's coming from the University of California Press.
Right, the Anatomy of Sound, and there's a wonderful picture of Corwin directing from behind his, the window, from the studio, looking in the window at Norman directing. And he really was my father in radio. There's no question about it. It was Ray Bradbury who introduced me to Norman Corwin, and those are two of the most important people in my life. So, taught me how to be a writer, I guess.
And the other one is going to be called The Sullen Art, the one with Ginsberg?
The Sullen Art, then the original version of that book, you can find it on eBay, was published back in 1963, but that was only a dozen interviews. This one is, I believe, 28 interviews, so it's more than twice as many. And the Ginsberg was severely edited back in 1963, just because I thought a lot of the material, it wasn't pertinent to poetry. But as it's turned out, it's just fabulously interesting stuff about drugs, about the war, his own particular life at that moment. So I think that I think we'll have some broader interest in that than just like an academic community who's reading about modern American poetry. Anyway, this is, these things are all part of my life. And as I'm in my 80th year now, these events that took place in the 1960s seem to really have historical merit. And this is without even looking at the strength of the Fireside Theater. I mean, to be told that the Fireside Theater was significant in the neo-hippie movement because we were on the air with these spokesmen for the Hopi traditionalists. I mean, that's amazing. That's amazing. Suddenly, it's a realm of study. Suddenly, I find myself in this. Oh, we're studying this. Not that we're studying the fire sign theater, although people do, but that we're studying aspects of the life that fed fire sign, that fed me, and fed into the fire sign over those beginning years when we were dealing so heavily with the Indians.
And I'm looking at some other stuff here. I wondered if you want to talk about what's going on with Otherworld Media.
Gee, Otherworld Media at the moment is Otherworld is, of course, the company that Judith and I. It's her company, and she started it before I ever knew her. It is our main production company. We are looking for the next thing that we are going to produce. We have a list of them. She's been going to the National Endowment for the Arts to maybe go back to the endowment. One of the things that we have gotten our entire radio archive together, which is about 50 years of radio history, almost all of it in the public radio medium, starting with those Sullen Art programs back in 1960, and going all the way through, you know, past the 21st century.
Yes.
There's a huge archive, and we have a number of people who are interested. We've been talking to institutions, including for the Fireside Theater Archive, the Library of Congress, which would be a great place for our collected archives to go. And you know, because Don't Crush That Dwarf, Hand Me the Pliers is already one of the selected pieces for their sound archive. So they're already kind of interested in who we are and how significant we may have been. But I think this is the year. This is our 50th year. The Fireside Theater started in 1966. 50 years is, you know, I know that Phil and Peter are gone. I know it's like being, half of a metaphor,
But the fire still burns, and that's what's important.
But the fire does still burn. Phil Proctor is hugely active, as always, in his own fields, performing and doing film and doing stage. I've encouraged him to get back to his biography, which has been in the course of writing. I think that will be one of the great funny books to come out of Hollywood. You know how funny Proctor is. He's had incredible adventures before we ever knew him and right on through. So he has great stories to tell. And I'm really looking forward to that book. And because he left off it for a while, you know, and got grumpy. But back to it, Phil. Back to it and do it.
Looking forward to it.
The other things that are coming down from Firesign, certainly the big future item is the double DVD set of all of our movies, Everything You Know Is Wrong. I have heard from Taylor Jessen that he is now looking at a test run of the first of the two discs.
Good.
This is movie theater quality. I'm intending to, as soon as I know it's in the house, I'm going to book the Clyde Theater in Langley here on the island, and we'll have a wonderful show of Everything You Know Is Wrong. And these are all color corrected and beautiful prints, you know. I mean, it's all going to be first rate. The Martian Space Party, which really shows us in early 72, at absolute height of that moment, that first psychedelic moment of the Fireside Theater. And some things that nobody has ever seen before. A show called About a Week, where we do the Bob Sideburn news. That's all been, and a long interview, also 1970.
Are you going to allow the public to that showing? E. Weston in chat ask if he could be there.
Yes, we'll absolutely advertise that and get it out there when it's scheduled here in town, for sure, because I definitely wanted to be on the theater screen. And the people at the Clyde in Langley are absolutely wonderful. And they showed, for example, they showed the Phoenix Project, which was Orson's movie. They had a special showing of that. And I'm sure they'll have a special showing when he finishes Five Grand, which is the next Western, which will be coming out, starring Orson, looking absolutely like a cowboy hero. You can check out Orson Osmond on his Facebook page and take a look at him on his rearing horse. And I have a spot in that movie. So I did a day's shoot as the old prospector. So perfect, perfect.
Sounds very cool.
So I think a lot will be happening this year to celebrate not only the 50th year, but the fact that we have we wrote so many words. You know, we really wrote a lot, and only some of that is on the albums, and only only some of it is also in print with five books of scripts out, you know. So, and that's still only part of the writing. There's still all of that wonderful Fighting Clowns era. I've got half a book written, another memoir with scripts from the 1979-80-81 period of Fighting Clowns. Funny stuff. That's Joey's House. Why television never picked us up, since we had so many good ideas. I'm not sure, but what the hell, it was 1980, so nothing was very good at that moment anyway. Any other questions out there? My glasses are off.
Airship Al says, my video archives are finally going to see the light of day. I sent dozens of tapes to Taylor a few years ago. I hope they get the rights to the David Susskind show for the DVD.
Yes, I don't know what the Susskind, the situation with the Susskind show is. I think that is in limbo, and no question that Ed, that Airship Al out there has contributed. He really has supplied an enormous number of video things that I've never seen before that pop up on Facebook. He said, "Ah, what?"
Well, it's a nice kind of surprise, though.
Yeah. So as he says, I was the source, and he was, you know. I mean, we have these great fans that have been around for 40 years who've collected us. And this is something that, you know, the artists themselves really have a great deal of trouble doing. Do I have an 8-track of Dear Friends? No, I don't think I do. But it's out there. Somebody's got an 8-track.
Probably on Amazon or eBay somewhere, I suppose.
Yeah. I do have a reel-to-reel of Dear Friends, so, well, I mean, you know, anything's possible.
How about that documentary movie? Any more news on that?
I haven't heard a thing, you know, and it was before Phil passed away that we were in contact. I think it's still possible because there's a great deal of interview film out there, huge amount of interview. I think it would be possible to pull something together. But now that Trumbo has come out, I'm beginning to think that a biography of me, if you've looked at the star of Trumbo, he looks exactly like me. And I'm thinking that might be that he was the star of that famous, somebody will write and say exactly who. Oh, somebody said I have an open reel of Dear Friends. Very good. I got mine in Vermont. Where did you get you? And Kat has been following you since April 67. Yes, you have, Kat. And another great bunch of stuff that has come through him. Bill Boggs, I think the Boggs midday interview, I think that they are on, as far as I know. Still haven't seen, you know, the latest of it yet. Thank you, Bryan Cranston. Bryan Cranston, who plays the lead in Trump, which is a terrific movie. It's really a movie that's really about something, and it's very close to, you know, us. When Norman Corwin was a gray-listed writer. All of those people who were blacklisted in the 50s were still around when the fire sign was in town. And in fact, blacklisting is a part of George Tirebiter's career. So, Bryan Cranston, he looks just like me. I was thinking, what a good biopic that might make. So I let it out there for everybody to pick who will play Bergman, Austin, and Proctor, because I got Cranston. He's mine.
One other question I had was, I've got an autographed copy of Dr. Firesign's Follies. I haven't read the whole thing yet, but it's absolutely wonderful. And I wonder how people can go about getting autographed copies of the Firesign material that's available at the store.
It was too complicated for me to buy copies of books from Bear Manor. And then me distribute them. I finally just ran out of time and energy to do
sure.
that. Everybody knows that if you send me a book in a postpaid, you know, with a return envelope, I will be happy to sign it and send it back to you.
Okay.
But all of the books from Bear Manor, that you have to get them through Bear Manor, which is good because they would like to sell more copies of the Fireside books. There's three books of Fireside Scripts and my novel, Ronald Reagan Murder Case, and Dr. Firesign's Follies, which has scripts and history. It talks a lot about the past. It's got a pretty good rundown of what we did in 40 years ago when I ran as George Tirebiter ran for vice president. And that's really an incredible history. Maybe I'll develop it in more detail sometime. This would be the year to do it. But let me tell you, I think Donald Trump found this out very quickly. If you say you're running for president, everybody takes you seriously, no matter how stupid and phony baloney you are. Because certainly that was the case with Tirebiter. I mean, I could say anything outrageous. People just wrote it down. Oh, all right, is that what you think out there? Backed by the whales, are you, George? All right. Yeah.
Okay, yes. I just posted a link to Bear Manor, the fire sign section. So,
oh, good. I see
that.
Kat remarks that the discovery of Planet X, yes, they're calling, there is a planet out there. And there's another thing, you know. How Time Flies, the album that I did for Columbia in 1973, which has got, you know, all of these interesting people on it, including Wolfman Jack. That is the only way you can get that album is from Laff.com. And, you know, I got it. The last check I got from Laff.com was $3, which means they sold three copies or something like that. I won't say it's a ripoff. God bless them. They put out a lot of comedy records. But it is the only place now that you can get that album because we the Fireside Theater, we the writers, we the authors and putative owners of this material can't get it out from Sony and own all those copyrights. I think after 50 years, they should just simply revert to us, and I'd be ready to have that happen.
You would think, wouldn't you? Yeah, that's a little silly.
So Bear Manor I think that really the everything you know, the anything you want to book from Bear Manor, which has this very long, half a book's worth of the mythical history of the Fireside Theater. is really, this is really, really funny writing that connects us to the history of entertainment. Much of Peter's last work was writing the notes, his notes, which are signed and recognizable in the Anything for the Anything You Want to script, and they're just hysterical. I kept waiting and waiting for them to come in, and finally they did before that book was published.
There's a question here from Johnny Piano. Says, curious if either Bozos or Everything You Know Is Wrong will ever see light in a digital format in their quad mixes.
You know, that's really a question for Taylor. I know that we have the quads, but once again, they are owned by the rights to the productions are owned by Sony, and we either have to take a stance and take them away, which might just work fine because nobody at Sony even knows we exist, you know, and just get them out ourselves. I'd love to have those quad mixes out. They are terrific. And Austin did them both, and they were just fabulous.
It seems like it would be a worthwhile enterprise to try to get back the rights to all
yes,
that stuff.
It absolutely would. Here's Kat saying is an interview with me and Tiny on Hour 25 about how time flies. Hour 25 was a KPFK show. Oh gosh, the guy who did it, his name escapes me. I know it well. But yes, Tiny and I did that. I just had some correspondence from Tiny the other day. She sent me unfortunately, one of our mutual friends passed away, and she was sweet enough to send me the obituary notice that was for our friend Gail. And so she lives down in Oregon, and we are in contact from time to time. And yes, I guess that should appear. This is the kind of stuff that could go up on my website, that interview, Kat, for example. Let's see. Were you aware of what other fellows were working on when you were working on How Time Flies? Well, that's from John Tobacco. Yes, the rough sequence events was that we found out to our complete astonishment that Procter and Bergman had an album contract and were doing TV or not TV. At the point that this was not to the advantage of the Fireside Theater, let me tell you. So, however wonderful an album it was. Because this was the age, this is 1972, of solo albums by members of groups, both Austin and I went to the company and said, we'd like our own individual albums. And so I had a contract for mine and worked with Steve Gilmore as a producer, and of course with Phil and Peter also appear on the album, both Phil and Peter in major roles. Austin started to work on what became Roller Maidens, but his project took longer. It really took all the way through 73, and it wasn't until 74 that it came out. I think that we had started working on Giant Rat in the fall of 73, and he was still working on Roller Maidens. I've always said that those three albums together are the Fireside Theater's sixth album. Fundamentally, the TV aspect that both Phil and Peter took, the kind of revolutionary stance that TV or not TV, of course, totally predictive of everything that happened in television. They were so on to that. Whereas How Time Flies was really conceived as an attempt to tell a story in a very popular media, that is to say, LP records from a major label, to tell a science fiction story. It was nominated for a Hugo, I think, the same year as one of the major, major science fiction movies, and lost it. But it was a whack at changing what the medium did, and it came at just as at the point where the media would begin to get rid of everything that was marginal. So it did go through a couple of printings, and I was pretty proud of it. Nothing like it, other than, let's say, the other two Fireside albums ever came out. It wasn't a comedy album. It was a story. It was a, you know, it was a piece of science fiction fiction. But I've never listened. Here's Don Giovanni saying, I never listened to Ada. Well, get on it then.
Yes, indeed. I shall post a link to that.
But one of the, I always listen to the three albums together as a huge epic triple Fireside Theater album. That is absolutely the way to listen to them. It's about an hour and a half. And there's a way that you can really interlace them. I believe somebody actually did that. It was probably Kat, who loves to edit, put the three albums together so they go, you know, I mean, after all, it's just channel switching. You can go anywhere you want, right? THX 1138-1971. Yes, that's probably right. This is Merlin writing in what the nominations were. Clockwork Orange won. It was Andromeda Strain, THX, Name of the Game. Both those in that year. Yep, yep, yep. It can be done, says Kat. Of course it can't be done. those were tough times for Fireside because the Procter and Bergman Act really took over their time. And the first three shows that they did as an act were really very Fireside-y. But then in order to, you know, as their life went on, why they played clubs and at that time, you know, the whole comedy thing was starting. Fireside existed in a world that was free of comedy clubs. That just didn't happen then. Mm-hmm. And as Procter and Bergman moved on into the mid-70s, then comedy clubs and that kind of entertainment really became another style. And so they moved in on that. And in order to be successful at that, they had to move it right along.
Yeah, what this country needs is almost stand-up.
Yeah, it is stand-up. It is stand-up, and it's very good stand-up. But I know that Austin and I felt sad that they had to do stand-up in order to, you know, but it was what they wanted to do.
They were good at it.
At that time, Austin and I were working on, we had a couple of movie projects going. You know, we were split into two halves. And that did last for a while. And it did cause a creative disruption in what we were doing because of the need to focus on then making a living rather than making a career. Or maybe the two went on at the same time.
Well, that's something you hope to be able to do.
Let's see, I'm looking back on... you just have a long story about trying to track down a copy of Book of Plays. Okay. Did you, Mr. Austin, ideas come up? Yes. John Tobacco, did you and Mr. Austin combine ideas in order to come up with In the Next World, or was it written face to face? We did, in fact, write the two sides more or less separately. And then the writing is maybe three times longer than the album. We wrote a lot of it together after those initial ideas. It was really based on wanting to do something out in the desert, in those same locations, the Heater, Hellmouth area. Phil and I really knew and loved that part of California, whereas Procter and Bergman, being from the East, the Midwest and the East, didn't have that Californian feeling about the desert, you know what I mean? We really felt it was a very strong, interesting, spiritual, crazy place.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really wanted to do another piece based in that area. Of course, it was like How Time Flies, when Phil and Peter were called into the studio, they immediately started to write. I mean, we knew they'd do that. That's why we hired them. You know, it's like you hire Phil Proctor to do voices because he can do anything. And in this case, we knew that we knew that they'd add so much to the writing when they actually appeared in the studio, because that's simply the way it worked.
Yes, I find Northern Arizona to be an extremely spiritual place.
It's the giant dinosaurs really kind of convince you of that.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about the area around the Grand Canyon specifically.
Oh yeah, well that's the Hopi country, and that takes us back to all of those trips to the Grand Canyon and to the Hopi Reservation. That's where they came from, the Grand Canyon, out of a hole in the ground.
The House of Stone and Light, as they call it.
So, I'm enthusiastic about the heritage of the Fireside Theater, based on, you know, these very interesting academic interests in our contributions. I mean, really, the thing about the Hopi is that how much of a part of our career was that? Well, it was enough so that there were a major Austin piece, our encore, you know, Thanksgiving, or it's the Indian Please. And the first cut, temporarily Humboldt County. So yes, it definitely did. And we then transmitted that information on, and that's all part of this strange phenomenon known as the Neo-Hopi community, you know? So you never know. Part of it was from being in radio. In those days, people wanted to wanted to find out about something, it came to the radio. And if you wanted to produce a documentary, basically you did it on the radio because it was cheap. Television documentaries cost you a lot of money. So,
absolutely. I'm not seeing anything specifically on a Neo-Hopi website of any kind.
No, there isn't anything, although the author of this particular paper, the name of which I can't remember now, I'm sorry, I'll put it up. He says it's the most read of all of his papers. He's an anthropologist. Most read of all of his papers, he thinks, because it shows up on Fireside Theater, Googling. So who knows? But I will put that, I will put a reference up so people can read it.
Okay. Very good. And what else is going on with the Great Fireside Theater?
Oh, boy. You know, I'm hoping to get down to L.A. and see Phil and Melinda. I haven't seen them for a long time. It would be, it's really been a while. Looking at the archives at the University of California, Santa Barbara, as a possible location for the radio archives. So we might do that trip next week, which would be fun. And as always, you know, Taylor is working on three or four projects at the same time and dubbing things off and always surprising me with what he has and what he has available. So I think it'll be a very rich year for turning out the more obscure aspects of Fireside, the very early material, maybe even that. I think what Peter called Fireside 2, which was the period around 79, 80, 81, where we did so much creative writing. The original Bill Vill comes in there, all that music. I know some people don't particularly like Fighting Clowns, but that was...
I love it.
Yeah, it has a great show, folks. That was so much fun to do with a band, and you're at the Roxy and all those lights. And
yeah, I swear Hey Reagan sounds so much like the Mothers of Invention. I just, you know, if I didn't know it was Fireside, I would think it was the Mothers.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Well, you know, the very first Mothers of Invention album was a big inspiration to me.
Really? Oh, yes.
The last cut, America Drinks and Goes Home.
Yeah.
That which has produced material music material, just junk recording, just, you know, it's a great mix. And I always thought, gee, I want to do that. It was like the Grateful Dead's Awaksamaksa album, whatever that one is.
Yeah, right, I know.
That has both studio recordings and live recordings mixed. Right. And I was very, very impressed the first time I heard that. And I think that was quite influential on the way we mixed both live and studio in Fighting Clowns.
And somebody had a question here. Is there a visit to the East Coast possible in the near future? That's Airship Bell asking.
Well, you know, my son Preston is now living in Philadelphia, so it is always possible. Hey, listen, we go where there's work, honestly. Sure. Otherwise, we're here on our lovely, if somewhat bleak and cold island at the moment. It's really wintertime here on Whidbey. Rained all day today, relentless rain. But we essentially stay here, and we travel when people would like to have us and will pay us to get there, and where we can entertain. The last places we were at the conference in Kansas City last June. Haven't made it to the East Coast as yet, but we made it as far as Kansas City for the Mark Time Awards and for the Norman Corwin Award at the Here Now conference last June. And that was sort of getting out of town, but you know, I got to say, you got to have a reason to have me there because you know, I got to go to these rehab classes, you know.
Well, there's some question about have you ever considered doing something with the Python people? This is Tobacco, and he says that my connections with folks in England and Australia have never heard of the FST. When I play your work on the radio via the internet, they always find it funny, so the work is more universal than I would think.
Never talked to any of the Python people. They came after the Fireside Theater, of course. So and we were published in England. I think all the first three albums, I know Dwarf was released. And that was about the same time that Monty Python got going. Maybe they had no idea we existed. I don't know, you know, I just can't tell.
Well, the question I had was, I was so impressed with Harry Shearer's work on your solo album, and I wondered if you'd ever thought about doing something with him again.
Oh, I love Harry, and we always hired him, Judith and I, for Otherworld Media projects.
Oh, okay.
Because he would, once again, you know, he could play Walter Winchell and Eddie Cantor in this, you know, doing voices and all of that. Of course, we both started at KRLA in 67. He had the great fortune of hooking onto a money machine, and God bless him. They don't come along too often. I would always, if I were doing a radio production again that Harry could be on, I'd call him in a second. I'd call Johnny Goodman in a second. You know, there are wonderful, wonderful actors out there that we've worked with. Many of them are still alive, and we'd be, you know, but we just haven't gotten, there's not a lot of interest in doing major radio productions as there was back in the 80s.
Yeah, that's true.
So we just haven't had the opportunity to do anything. We'd love to. But once again, where's that money? Let's see.
Yeah, where's the gig?
Where's the gig? Let's see. I don't know if he's asked ever considered doing an album with Proctor. Proctor and I have talked about doing a Mutton Smut special comedy album. As a matter of fact, that was the last thing.
Cool.
And I think you know, there's a very good chance we might do that. Yes, Phil Hartman did do the comedy, did do the cover. That's quite true. Whether we'll perform live again, I don't know. Let's see, Procter & Bergman did meet Monty Python. Yes, Procter & Bergman met everybody because they traveled extensively, you know. Let's see, Pilot, the Goons, well, the Goons were, of course, for something we all had in common, and my direct contact with the Goons was that Peter Sellers called me up one Sunday morning to thank me for doing a series on KPFK about the Goon Show. We had produced, we were going to play like 10, 12 episodes of great episodes of the Goon Show. And Fred Haynes and I produced like an introduction to the Goon Show that introduced all the different voices and characters that those three actors did. And it was very sweet. And he called me up. He had just, he had survived that terrible heart attack, and that we all thought he was dead. And one Sunday morning, hello, this is Peter Sellers. You know, so it's just to say thank you. It was a wonderful thing to do, and it taught me that there's, you know, that that's a good thing to do. You know, somebody does something nice for you. Let's see. Great idea, fella. My full performance, Ronald Reagan, Murder Miss, full audio performance. No, we haven't done that. Yes, Austin and Osmond with Harry Shearer and Richard Paul on the Peter Marshall Show. That is a very funny, weird video. That's the other Fireside Theater, the one that didn't happen with Harry Shearer and Richard Paul. Well, Procter on Rocky and Bullwinkle, Rugrats. Procter has a huge repertoire. This is Peter Bergman talking about radio, watch the Fireside Theater, mark time. Yes, it's all gone red on me in front of my face here. So there you are.
Well, Kat was asking if you'd listen to his collage, Osman College Collage Graduation.
I have not heard it yet. Are you going to play it?
I wasn't going to play tonight. I've already played it, I suppose.
You've already played it. The problem with these things is they come up on my, and then they get lost. And I'm sorry, Kat. I absolutely demand the opportunity to listen to these things. But it's my time is getting tighter and tighter to do things like just sit down abstractly and listen to something. You know, it's funny, having been in the audio business all my life, and now the hardest thing is to get that moment, that free 10 minutes or 20 minutes to sit down and listen. But I will. I know where it is, and I will hear it. What else is there here? maybe we've reached the end of this, do you think?
Well, it's up to you, sir. If you've got something else you'd like to talk about, please do. If not, I'm thinking about playing How Time Flies for people.
Well, that would be super, and I think you should do that. I'm always interested in anything, in any, you know, the lines of questioning that come out. Suddenly, we're following through some very interesting things, and I'm always intrigued by the places that people go when they ask me or us questions about our work. So those keep coming into Facebook. I'll try to answer them. And
well, if you'd like to get into the main chat, they could ask you there if you like.
Well, yeah, but I just find it difficult to do that.
Okay.
I'd rather just have a straight, you know, tell me about this kind of question. And always, when, let's see, Canadian references. Okay, last thing. I've always wondered about the many Canadian references in The Tale of the Giant Rat of Sumatra. Can I talk about that? Here's the thing. The announcer, Nick Danger's announcer is Canadian. And we've always had a great deal of fun with the idea that he's Canadian and that he's in a different union, and that his whole system is not American. That is, he doesn't recognize. What is this guy, Nick Danger? Who are these? What is this policeman? This is not the way we do things in Canada at all. So we've just always had a lot of fun with the different temperaments between Canada and the U.S., especially since the line between Canada and the U.S. runs in the ocean about 10 miles from here. So it's not too far away. Hey, and thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
I will come back soon. Just let me know. Maybe next month we can do it. We'll be a little farther on.
That would be great.
And if anybody has Marshmallows in Despair and has read it and would like to just put a little blurb line on Facebook, I'd love to get it. Thank you all. I really love you so much. You know that. You know all of the people that we've loved for so many years who are out there. Thank you.
Thank you,
and good night.